Welcome to the Your Oxygen Mask First podcast. I'm Erin Young, and this is a space where we explore ways to help the helpers. Because you can't help anyone before you help yourself. So sit back, put your own oxygen mask on, and enjoy the ride. And thank you so much again for joining us. We are doing a little bit of a mini-series on people who have come out from the depths of despair and have created a new life or created something new to help other people from what they've learned. And today I'm honored to be joined by Michael Johnson. Michael is a United States Marine veteran who ended up slipping through the cracks and was homeless for 2 years. He had some struggles with getting a job and housing, and he was not an addict. Michael has risen up and is now using his life to help other people in similar situations. Thank you so much for joining us, Michael. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
So let's start with a little bit of your personal background. Who are you? I know it's a loaded question.
Well, I'm actually born and raised in Los Angeles, California. So Southern California area I'm very familiar with.
Go Rams.
Yeah, I have a soft spot for them. I'm a true Raider fan, so.
Okay.
We're going to keep that on a minimum. Went to USC, went to boot camp in San Diego at MCRD, lived in California pretty much my whole life outside of the military, short of maybe 3 years when I lived in Savannah, Georgia. But I'm just a good old city boy.
Hmm. And tell us a little bit about your service.
Well, as you mentioned earlier, I'm a Marine Corps veteran. I spent 6 years in the Marine Corps as an aviation mechanic. Spent a little time in a few different countries, Japan, Korea, Philippines, Australia, Egypt, Cuba. My last year, our unit was in Beirut, and I was there during the bombing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of good, close friends that I had was in that building. And it had me and a lieutenant went on a drove by the perimeter of the building, and we were about maybe, I would say maybe a mile and a half away, and we hear this explosion, and we come back, and all we see is rubble. Mm-hmm. And that was an experience, because we knew who was still in the building. And we knew just by looking at the building, it was not good. So we stayed there maybe a week helping remove rubble and bodies. And then they sent me back to 29 Palms where they discharged me. So once I got out, a month after that, my mother passed away. So that's pretty much where this kind of started, because it started from that particular tragedy. Then the other tragedy with my mother. 13 months later, my only brother gets killed. He has two small children. So I took over his two kids. I ended up going to court and getting custody of his kids. And I raised them like they were mine. And I went from a single male to a father. And I sent both those kids through college. One of the oldest one is actually in Germany right now as an aeronautical engineer. And the youngest one is in New York working for a gaming company. And he's been with that company now almost 20 years. And from that point on, it's been, once I knew they were all right, then I decided it was time for me to start trying to take care of myself. Well, that was easier said than done. It started around that time where things weren't going as well as I would have hoped they were going. And a lot of struggles taking care of the kids, watching, making sure they were okay, and doing a few things that parents do to help their children that I had no idea about, because at that time I was maybe 24, 25 years old. I didn't know how to raise kids, but I learned very, very quickly. So with that being said, it worked out very well for them. I will have to work until I'm late into my 70s because I'm still paying for, you know, a few things. So that's how it all basically started. This whole, from the from that point till now, that's where it started.
And did you have a hard time transitioning back to civilian life once you came back? Because that's a horrible, horrible thing to have to endure. And then you come home to nothing.
I didn't have time to find out if I had a hard time transitioning or not. I really didn't. It was, okay, you've got funerals to take care of. You have funerals, now you have kids to take care of. So it was, everything was on the fly. So I never really got a chance to sit down and think, okay, I'm no longer in the military. What do I do now? It's, oh, you got kids, you have to go to work. So I was taking jobs, pretty much any jobs I could get. And it just so happened I was working, I got a job working, and I'm about to just age myself, for a company back in the 80s called Tower Records. And I worked. I was in the shipping and receiving department. I was a receiving supervisor. And I worked there until I hurt myself in one of the delivery trucks. And I ended up having surgery on one of my knees. So I couldn't work for a year. And for a year, I was living off workers' comp. So during that year, I applied for a custodial job for the Los Angeles Unified School District. Well, about close to the end of the year of my rehabilitation on my knee, they called and they interviewed me and I got that job. So that was very, very fortunate, because then I didn't have to, it was a very good paying job. And the kids were at an age where they needed more attention. They were both in school and things were getting more and more expensive. So this was very well needed. And I stayed there for a couple years until that job actually, it didn't go away, but the position was under a lot of scrutiny from people prior to me. So I decided I'm going to go somewhere else. And I got a job in Burbank, California, working for a third party call center. And we did tech support for the AT&T dial-up service. Again, I'm dating myself. The old, you hear that modem noise. Yeah, that's what we did. I did that for 6 years. And that didn't pay as well as the school board, but I had so much fun at that job. I enjoyed the people. I enjoyed what I did. And it was a lot of fun. That job went away. And that was really heartbreaking, because one day we're there, next day it's no longer. The company decided they were going to terminate the contract with AT&T, and they were no longer going to have a call center, and they were just going to go out of business. Well, okay. Well, by this time, the kids are in high school. And I said, all right, fine. Now I have to do something else. And I'm job hopping. I'm hopping from one job to another job, going through temp services and any little job I can get just so these kids can eat and make sure they've got clothes and they can go and they're clean and they have a roof over their head. So I'm doing all this. And I would say it was maybe a 6 year period that I never went to the doctor. I never got a physical. I never got a checkup. Nothing. For 6 years, I didn't go to the doctor. And I started to get, they call it burnout, but I don't know what you really, really call it. But I was getting really short-tempered and irritable. And I would still go to work every day. But I was very, very short with people. So they finally told me, Michael, take a vacation. I said, I can't afford a vacation. They said, well, you have to take time off. I'm like, okay. So what I did was I waited till the summer and I sent the kids to camp. And I went, while they were gone, I went over to the VA and I talked to a couple outreach workers or more or less case managers, and they set up some doctor's appointments for me. And I was more concerned about my physical health than I was my mental health. I didn't think nothing was wrong with me mentally. I'm like, okay, I'm fine. I'm just working a lot. So I saw the doctors. They said I was fine physically. They never once asked any questions regarding my mental health at that time, because at that time it wasn't a requirement. Now it's a requirement that they ask. At that time it wasn't. So they concentrated more on my physical well-being. So everything was fine at that point. So we skip maybe 3 years and the kids are in college. And see, I was smart with this. I sent them out of state. I said, you're not going to go to college in California because you're going to be too close. I'm going to send you out of state. So I sent them, one went to Grambling University, the other one went to Southern University in Louisiana. So while they were at school, I started working for eHarmony.com, which is a dating site. And I loved it. I stayed there for 3 years. I loved it. It was great. It was fine until he sold the company. The owner was Dr. Neil Clark Warren, and he sold the company. And a gentleman from the owner of Orbit bought it. And he wanted to turn a $1 million company into a $1 billion company. So he said, in order to do that, you have to take a pay cut. Well, nobody was taking a $5 pay cut. Nobody. And we're talking every individual to work for that company was going to take a $5 pay cut. Well, half of the company quit. And he said, fine, I'll bring in my own people. And he did. So when I left there, I was unemployed. And I was living off what money I had saved. So I'm thinking, okay, I can't stay in California. I can't stay in LA. It costs too much. I've got to start looking out of state. And I started looking out of state. And I got an offer from a company in Savannah, Georgia. And they asked me, would I be willing to live in Georgia? I said yes. So they offered me $16 an hour. Now in LA, that's so-so. But in Savannah, Georgia, you can live very well off of $16 an hour. So I moved out there. And I loved it. It was great. Wonderful job. I had a nice two-bedroom, two-bathroom apartment for $425 a month. You can't get anything for $425 a month in California. So I stayed there for 3 years. And while I was there, I reconnected with who is my wife now. But she was living in Baltimore. We reconnected. And we ended up getting engaged again for the third time. She tells me she wants to get married in Los Angeles. And I'm trying as hard as I possibly can to talk her out of it. So she didn't go for that. So she said, okay, if you want to get married to me, we got to get married in LA. I said, all right. Now, in the meantime, I'm telling her, if I leave Georgia and I come back to LA, I'm going to be homeless because I'm not going to have anything. And she said, well, it won't be long. You can stay with one of my friends. I said, okay, all right. So I quit my job, sold all my furniture, bought a ticket, flew back to LA. Well, before I did that, her father passed away. So when I landed in LA, the first thing I was doing was going to a viewing. The next day was the service. So I hit the ground running. So once the service was over and we had that accomplished, for 2 weeks I stayed with one of her friends. Well, I knew I couldn't stay there for a long period of time, so I went to the county office in downtown LA and I got on GR. and I told them I was homeless. They gave me a voucher to move into the Wine Guard on 6th and San Pedro in the heart of Skid Row, downtown LA. And that is the worst place ever. There's over, well, actually the numbers have gone down. It used to be 55,000 homeless individuals in Skid Row. Now it's 52,000. But I was one of them. Stayed there, and while I was there, I found out about a veterans grant per diem program, which was for veterans, and it was a 2-year program. So I with like maybe 3 to 4 days left on my voucher, I got an interview to go into that program, and I got into it. They never told me anything about housing programs. They didn't tell me anything about employment programs. They didn't tell me anything. They just said, here are the rules. You can stay here, but while you're here, you have to give us 75% of your income for savings. I'm like, okay, well, I'm on GR. I get $221 a month. So you can have that. You know, you're not going to feed me, so I have to get CalFresh. So for 2 years, I lived there, and we're talking the heart of Skid Row. So we're talking about people getting shot, people getting stabbed, people committing suicide on a daily basis. You're talking mental illness on a very, very high scale that's just out in the open and untreated. It's very, very scary because the crime rate in downtown is very, very high. And I would never go outside after it got dark. I wouldn't do it. If it didn't matter what was going on, if I had to go out, it would be in the daytime. And even in the daytime, I had never gotten robbed, but I got threatened to be robbed. I got into a few fights just to protect myself from getting robbed. I went back to school, got a degree in computer science, said, okay, I'm going to go work for a computer company. That didn't work either. Because I didn't have the experience, there was very few companies that were willing to take a chance. So for 2 years, I couldn't get a job. For 2 years, everything I tried, everything I did, went wrong. It was very, very disheartening. It was very, very depressing. And it was very depressing to me because this is my hometown. I was born and raised here. I should be able to get a job here. And I couldn't. And I couldn't understand why. I couldn't get any help from any of the caseworkers or case managers, as they like to call themselves, at this grant per diem program. All they cared about was, oh, are you providing us with your money every month? And here, you need to pass this drug test. Okay, fine. So when they finally did start telling me about some of the housing programs, I found out that I didn't qualify. For example, there's a program called HUD-VASH. It's a permanent supportive housing program. Well, I applied for it and they came back and said I didn't qualify. And I asked them why. They said, well, do you have a service-connected disability? I said, no. They said, well, are you an alcoholic? I said, no. Are you a drug addict? No. Do you have any mental disability? I said, no. They said, oh, you don't qualify. Well, what do you, why do, I mean, I'm a veteran. I said, it doesn't matter. You don't need case management. That was their words. I'm like, why would I need case management? I just need something to get me on my feet. Well, we can't, this isn't the program for you. I said, okay, fine. So then they tell me about a program called SSVF, which is Supportive Services for Veteran Families. So I applied for that, and they tell me, oh, you missed the cutoff. You have to apply for this 90 days after you get into the program. I'm like, well, I've been in the program a year and a half, and I'm just finding out about it. So they said no. So then I contacted PATH. They said no. I contacted Alpha Project. They said no. I didn't qualify for any of these programs due to the fact that I don't need case management. And it got really, really frustrating. I said, okay, fine. It's time for me to make change. Either I make a change or I'm going to go to jail for hurt, and I'm going to hurt somebody, and I don't want to do that. So I told my fiance, I said, listen, there's three places I can go that I know I can do well. I can go back to Georgia, and I know you don't want to do that. I can go to Houston, Texas. You have family out there. We both can do well. She didn't want to do that. I said, okay, well, my last and final choice was going to be San Diego. That's the only other military town that's in California that I'm familiar with. She agreed to that. I said, okay, fine. So I started calling the VA, and I started talking to one of the outreach workers at the La Jolla VA hospital, explaining to them what I wanted to do. They said, well, there's nothing we can do until you get here. When you get here, come and see me. I said, okay. So March 23rd, 2015, I got to San Diego. It was a Friday. Monday morning, I went up to the VA, registered my health care, talked to one of the homeless outreach workers, and they got me into St. Vincent de Paul, which was a shelter. Well, that's the way you get into their grant per diem program. You go through their shelter. 30 days later, they transfer you over to the grant per diem program, which is across the courtyard. That place, I'm not going to say anything bad about them compared to what LA was like, but they were challenging. The first thing they do is they freeze your clothes. They take all your clothes and they put them in the deep freezer, and they say it kills bed bugs. I'm like, okay, fine. So for 24 hours, I'm walking around in a white jumpsuit that they gave me. So I'm like, okay, fine. So after that, and I get my clothes back and I get all my paperwork and stuff, the first thing I do is I go find a computer lab. And I start putting in applications. And I found out that the Metropolitan Transit Service for San Diego, MTS, was hiring for bus drivers. And I'm sitting there going, I do not want to be a bus driver, but I know I need a job. I said, okay, what the heck? I applied for the bus driving position. And I'm applying at all these other places. Nobody called. Nobody. So the day before they transfer me over to the grant per diem program, MTS called and set up an interview. No, they actually set up the first stages of orientation. So I went to that. I'm like, okay, this is good. At least they called back. So I'm over in the grant per diem program. About a week goes by, I get another phone call. They want to schedule me an interview. I said, okay, I'm getting an interview. So I call my fiance and tell her, hey, I got an interview with the bus company. She's like, great. I'm like, okay, we'll see. And I'm telling her, I do not want to be a bus driver. I just don't. It was not something that I wanted to do. She's like, don't worry about it. God's got you. I said, okay, I believe that. So I go on the interview for the MTS. They actually liked me. They actually liked me, and they got a kick out of the fact that I used to work for eHarmony.com. So they hired me. 2 weeks prior to the interview, I talked to the case manager at the grant per diem program, and I asked her, she's a young 23-year-old young girl. She's not a veteran. She just got married. This is her first little job. she doesn't know anything about veteran programs. Not a thing. I asked her, I said, do you know anything about the SSVF program? She said, no, what is that? So I explained it to her. And I said, this is a program I want to get into. She said, well, let me make some calls and see what we can do. She said, okay. So that same afternoon, she calls me and tells me, here's the number to the SSVF program. So I call them and tell them, hey, this is where I am, and this is what I'm looking for. They tell me, well, do you have your DD-214? I say, yes. Do you have your Social Security card? Yes. Do you have your ID? Yes. Do you have 3 months worth of bank statements? I said, yes. They say, can you be down here this afternoon? I said, yes. I go down there, I fill out the paperwork, and I turn in all my paperwork, and they said, okay, we're going to call you within 3 days. So they called me within 3 days, and I got to meet my case manager. And we talked, and she asked me, well, what are you doing as far as employment? I said, well, I applied for the MTS bus driving position, and I got an interview. While I'm sitting in the office with her, MTS calls me and tells me I got the position. So she's sitting there listening to this conversation, and I'm thanking this woman profusely. And she says, you got the job, didn't you? I said, yes, I did. She said, well, how much do they pay? I said, well, they start you out at $16.30. She said, you are extremely lucky. I said, why? She said, because you're already in our program. If you weren't in our program already, you would make too much money to qualify for the program. I said, okay. So she asked me, she said, when do you start? I said, the 1st of June. She said, good. You've got 2 weeks after that to find a place to live, because your 90 days will be up in 2 weeks. I said, okay. So I call my fiance, tell her what's going on. I start the position. I'm in training. She's emailing me places to see, apartments to visit after I'm off training and apply for. So I'm in my MTS uniform, leaving training, going to different apartment complexes, trying to find a place to live. Training is 6 days a week. So on Saturday, after training, I'm out looking. So my fiance came out here one day during the week, I think the third week in June, and she saw a place and she told me about it and she wants me to see it on Saturday. I said, okay. So we come out to El Cajon on Saturday after I get off training. They show me the place. I'm in uniform and they tell me how much it is. And I explained to them that I'm part of this SSVF program and they would pay the move-in costs. They say, that's fine. We fill out the application. I give the information to the SSVF caseworker. They do an inspection. I get a phone call from the management company telling me, come pick up your keys. I've been in the same apartment for the last going on 4 years. I have not left this apartment.
Yay, I just want to clap for you.
Yay. Now, I did leave MTS, though, because I couldn't handle it. It was way too stressful. And it wasn't driving a 40-foot bus. It wasn't the passengers. It was MTS. Their rules and regulations are so stressful. If you're a bus driver and you break a nail, you're liable. If one of the passengers break a nail or stubs a toe, you're liable. I couldn't handle that. So I left that. But before I left, I went to Manpower and they got me a temp to hire position for 211, which is an information and referral service. And I went and interviewed with them, and that was in 2016. No, that was 2015. I'm sorry. That was 2015. So they hired me. I left the bus company and they 211 found out I was a veteran. So they put me in a department or a program called Courage to Call, which is a peer-to-peer specialist. And I've been with that program now going on 4 years. And I'm not leaving. I'll be there until whenever. Now, I did get promoted. So, and that was recently. In December, I got promoted from a peer-to-peer specialist to a veteran peer navigator. And the difference is with a peer-to-peer specialist, you're the first line of defense, more or less. At 211, that's the call center. Now, Courage to Call is a three-tier program. 211 is one tier. San Diego County is another tier. And Mental Health Services is a third tier. The 211 information line, that's who you call as a veteran. And they provide you with resources. If they feel that you may need a higher level of care, then they'll connect you with me. And that's when I do what I do. And like I said, I've been there since ever since, and I don't plan on going anywhere. And to MHS or Courage to Call is in the process of becoming a housing program as well. So I will become the new housing navigator, which means I'll be able to actually help homeless veterans find permanent housing. And that's me.
Well, that is just incredible. You must be one of the most resilient persons I have ever talked to. Or person. That didn't make much sense, but it's late, so you know what I mean, though.
I understand. I don't know. People call it resilient. I just look at it like, okay, this is how my parents raised me. And they would be very, very disappointed if I was anything but this. And the last thing I want to do is disappoint them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what kept me from losing my mind and really going off the deep end, was remembering my mother, remembering my grandparents, my father, and saying, okay, you know better. And I think that's what kept me going.
And it had to be absolutely so frustrating to want to get help, ask all of these different people and organizations, I want to work, I want to thrive, help me, I serve my country, why can't I get a little bit of a hand to find my place? It's really disheartening to find out that it was so difficult for you.
Yes, it was really, really difficult, and it still is, to be honest with you, because I talk to a lot of veterans out there that are homeless, and there's two types of veterans that have the hardest time. One is a veteran that doesn't qualify for anything. The other one is a veteran who has children and who's a single father. There are no programs for him. Those are the two most frustrating type of veteran I've ever met and talked to. Because what do you say to them? It's really, there's nothing you can say except you're right. It isn't anything out there. But don't give up. You know, yes, it's going to be very, very difficult. Yes, it's going to be very, very frustrating. And there's going to be times when you want to just scream. Just don't give up. Because there are people that are out there that will help you some kind of way. You just have to know where to go. And that's where, I guess, my organization comes in at. But it's very, very difficult finding help for people who, as the VA say, don't need it. They do need it. They just need it in a different way. You know, and yes, everybody that was in the military has some type of mental illness. Everybody. Because you're programmed while you're in the military. And then you come out of the military and that program doesn't apply anymore. So you may have had a, it doesn't matter what kind of job you had in the military. You're told what to do. You're told when to get up. You're told when to eat. You're programmed to do these things. And even not serving combat, you're going to have some type of a mental issue. It's not going to be severe where you have PTSD or you're having depression or anything like that. It could be very, very subtle, but you have it. And it's hard to help veterans or anyone else whose mental illness is that subtle because you don't think you have it. I didn't think I had it. Little did I know I was suffering from depression, and I didn't know it. It was that subtle because I was still functioning. I was still doing what I needed to do, but I was suffering from depression.
And did you wind up seeing somebody for that and getting some help?
Actually, no. I honestly didn't because when I finally found out about it, they told me, and this is when I said they, I mean the VA, all you need to do is go to work. All you need is a job. And your depression will go away. And to me, that sounded kind of crazy. I've never heard of depression just going away, like it's a common cold. And that was all they told me. And I was like, okay. And they never once said it again, or even offered to have any type of follow-up or anything. But that's what happened. And it's the strangest thing because I've never heard anyone say, oh, yes, you have depression, but if you get a job, it'll go away. Have you ever heard of anything like that?
No.
Because it doesn't go away. It really doesn't. But, I've worked through it based on a lot of different things that's happened to me in my lifetime. I got married. That was a joyful time. I did get a decent job. Now that, and because I got married and because I am able to take care of my family and because I am able to provide assistance with other people that were in my shoes is very fulfilling. So I wouldn't consider myself depressed anymore. No. And, but no, it didn't just go away. It didn't just go away.
Well, luckily you were able to.
But that's the VA.
Yeah, that's not the first time I've heard that either. But I'm happy that you were able to kind of self-redirect and get yourself on a better path because there is things that you can do for your own mental health and to help depression. It will probably never really go away, and some days you're going to have great days. Hopefully, more great days than bad days, but maybe for people who are not so lucky as you to be able to kind of climb out of it, to know that there is help out there and, you just have to be persistent and advocate for your own care, I think.
It's you do in a lot of ways, but the big thing is knowing where to go. And they don't know. People don't know. And for any veteran that you talk to, though, or I talk to, the first thing I tell them is call 211. Ask to speak to one of the peer-to-peer specialists. That's the first step. They can get you headed in the direction you need to go. And as long as you're persistent, things will start to turn around. Yes, is it going to be difficult? Yes. Is it going to take forever? Probably so. But you will see progress. It's not a, there's no quick fixes for this. There's no wake up today, everything's great, fine and dandy, and yesterday no longer, it doesn't work that way. But you have to be persistent and you have to stay focused. And you always have to remember there's something greater out there for me. I just have to keep my eye on the prize and keep doing what I'm doing and keep it straight and narrow and try very, very hard not to deviate from where I want to go. And if you need someone to talk to regarding that, there's organizations you can call. There's the Veteran Crisis Hotline. There are so many organizations out there that you can actually talk to an individual. If it's nobody, even if you're a primary care physician, you can talk to them. And a lot of people don't feel comfortable talking to everybody, but especially they don't feel comfortable talking to their family because the family doesn't understand. There's veteran groups that you can get into, and these are all veterans that's been in the same position you're in, or been in, or gone through the same type of experiences you've had. And they have these groups every day that you can get and talk to. If necessary, you can call. Oh, there's just so many. And just off the top of my head, I can't even rattle off as many organizations as it is that you can talk to. But if you're honestly want to make a change in your life based on, let's say you're having issues with your housing, call 211. They'll get in touch with me and they'll refer you to me and I'll help you. You know, just pick up the phone. They're 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Would you recommend other veterans who are in the shoes that you've been in to also work to either help volunteer or try to find a service-related employment? Because that seemed to really help you, where you kind of found your niche helping others that were like you.
That's I think it's really up to the individual, because every individual has to find their own little niche. You know, what's good. What I went through with this, and I found this particular rate of employment, everybody can't do. And I'm not saying don't try it. If you want to volunteer, call 211. We have a volunteer. We need volunteers every second Saturday of the month, because we provide a food distribution event, and we provide food to not only homeless veterans, but active duty veterans as well. And we're always looking for volunteers. So like this Saturday, we're having the event, and we often take volunteers to these events, and they help out providing food to these active duty families, homeless individuals. And we do an intake, you know, and get their information. But that's a great way to find out if this is the kind of thing that you're interested in and would like to do more of, is volunteer at one of our events, or even maybe try to volunteer at one of the yearly stand downs for veterans. This is another way you can find out if this is something you really, really want to do. And I'm here to tell you, and I'm going to be the first one to tell you, it's not easy. It's really not easy. You have to have a very open mind. You have to be extremely patient, because you can't. You're going to listen to some things that are that'll pull on your heart. And you have to be able to handle that. Because sometimes I've listened to some things that made me almost want to cry, because I identify with it so much, but I can't express those kind of feelings when I'm with a client or other veterans that are out here experiencing these things. They, you know, can't let them see you cry, but when they leave and I'm in a room by myself, I might cry. I might cry and go, wow, I got to help them. You know, so yeah, they can volunteer at these events. If they really want to know about any other type of volunteer services, and this is something else 211 can help them with. They have a veterans community. It's called Veterans Community Connection, and they help with volunteers as well. And if they contact 211, they can ask them about that particular program, and they can get them connected with a volunteer service with them as well.
Well, that's very exciting. And even if you're not a veteran, but you still want to help our vets, I think anybody listening, even if they're not in the San Diego area, could look up or find some resources for different veteran organizations that they can participate with too.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, Wounded Warriors, they have volunteer services. They can actually, if you're outside of the San Diego area, get in contact with your local VA, Veterans Affairs Office, and see what type of organizations that they may be connected with that'll provide some type of volunteer service. We need all the help we can get.
Absolutely. So, Michael, I have a question for you. Is there anything that you would like to tell people about, or a misconception that you want to set straight about being homeless?
Homeless are people. They're not something you step over. They're not a disease. They're not something that's contagious. Homelessness is a situation that can be rectified. It's not anything that's, I've seen people, and I've had people look at me with a look of disgust on their face. And like I'm dirty, and if they touch me, their arm's going to fall off. And that's not true. That's not true. There's many. And I tell people, you are one paycheck away from being in the same situation that that homeless person is in. It's not that far off. And there's nothing wrong with you. Life happens. Situations happen to where you might find yourself to be in this position. You see a homeless person and you walk across the street. Well, what if that homeless person was you? Would you still want someone to just avoid you like you were the plague? Or would you want them to actually try to help you? So I just tell people, don't look at homelessness as a disease. This is it's a situation that can actually be changed, but it takes everyone to do it. Not just me, not just you, not just one organization. It takes everybody, starting from the lowest person all the way up to everyone in the federal government. It takes everyone to change this. But that's what I would tell them.
Well, now I want to cry. So let's lighten it up. I would like a funny story from you. It can be about your service or anything that happened at 211. Something funny.
Funny.
Funny, because I feel like you've got it in you.
You sound like my wife. She's always talking about, tell me funny. I'm like, wait, I'm not a stand-up comedian. Okay, this may not be funny. But it's interesting. There's a group called Has Heart. And last year they did a project where they went to all 50 states and they interviewed a homeless veteran representing each state. Well, they took that veteran, they took his story, and they designed a t-shirt that told his story. They also created like a coffee table book, and they did some photographs. Now, the homeless vet will receive 25% of whatever that t-shirt sells forever. I'm the veteran that represents San Diego. So they actually, and I'm waiting on my shirt now. They actually designed a shirt telling my story. And the name of the shirt is called Homeless to Success. And it's a really cool design. It's a big number 2. And the top of the 2 where it loops says homeless. And you see a road leading down to the word success. And there's 6 stars on along that road. And each of those stars represents the Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Air Force, and Coast Guard.
Well, that's really cool. Is your picture on it?
No, but my picture's on the website, and it'll be in the book, because they did an interview, and they took photos, and I think the interview is on the website.
That is so cool. I will definitely provide the links, not only for 211 Encourage to Call, but also for that too. We'll get you some exposure.
Yeah, I guess I'm the poster child now.
Yeah, there's no turning back now.
Oh, no. Celebrity. everything is just at my feet now.
Now we got to get you on Ellen. If we could get you on Ellen.
And I love, it'll and be awesome. See, I watch Ellen's game show. I love her game show.
Okay, goal for 2019. Get Michael on Ellen. Let's do it.
Yeah.
So is there anything else that you would like to talk about or say that we didn't get an opportunity to cover? Any closing thoughts?
Just no matter how bad you may think it is, there's always someone out there that you can reach out to. It could be the police. If you even feel like, okay, I got to talk to somebody, the police will listen to you. I know the kind of relationship people have with the police, and I know a lot of folks won't like that idea, but they're actually open to that. Just don't give up. As bad as you may think it is, don't give up.
Well, thank you so much, Michael, for coming on. I really appreciate you opening up and telling all of your story, even the hard parts. I think it's really important to get out there because people need to know that they're not alone. And your situation, even though it's unique to you, is unfortunately not unique to a lot of veterans. So I'm so glad that you came on tonight.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate this.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen today. And I hope that you found something that really resonates with you. I can't wait to share even more. So please subscribe to the podcast, and you can find links to our resources in the description and at youroxygenmaskfirst.com.